On this week's show, discussing people-driven innovation with Rick Kahn from Innovate AEC. In this week's news, Apple Vision Pro, manufacturing boom, chatting contracts, and more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the Kahn Tech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, we're back. I got my boy Nathan Wood back in his studio. It seems like construction might be finishing.
We're brushing off the dust, starting up final cleanup, and should be hopefully having a final inspection later this week or next week. So only 1 month behind schedule, which is pretty remarkable in the residential world.
Yeah, that's not too bad. So my VRBO is ready for me to come back now?
I would say so. Yes, your room. We've had my father-in-law in town already and had it ready for him. So yeah, I'd say your room's ready.
All right. For those of you who don't know, I VRBO with Nathan on my way through to Denver when we're flying through there. So yeah, that's right. Contact bros. It gets that way sometimes. Speaking of contact bros, I brought Rick Kahn, an OG of the construction technology world, someone I consider a mentor to me and an inspiration along the way. He was one of the earliest people I gravitated toward. So I'm stoked, Rick, to have you with us this morning.
Thank you so much. So glad to be here.
We're going to jump into a killer interview, but you guys know how this goes. Before we do, we got to pause for the cause.
Whenever you're talking about something as substantial as suicide awareness and as alarming as to statistics around construction being the second highest rates of suicide in industry, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that this was a one-player fix, meaning that it just takes one silver bullet or one easy button to solve this challenge. This is a multi-threaded challenge, if you will, and it's really something that is the responsibility of all of us to lean in, to raise awareness, to provide tools and resources, to up-level conversations we have around, you know, I mean, in construction, we're pretty much, hey, what's my job require me to get it done at any cost? Well, we now see what the outcome of that is. So I think it's important that we partner together to really have a unified voice around why mental health awareness is important, why it matters, and how we can frankly do better as an industry. It takes each of us leaning into really.
All right. That. You hear it. You hear it every week. Do I really have to say it? Yes, I'm going to say it. Check us out at youtube.com/@TheKahnTechCrew. And you never know. Thanks, Kyle, for hitting that subscribe button. Yep, that's right. I saw it. I told you, you might get your name if you hit that button. I do get those alerts. All right, make sure you get out there and smash that subscribe button. At the ConTech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision-making, which builds trust and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. So listen, put your spreadsheets on ice and leave your email behind for the decision-making platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build.
All right, we're back with Rick Hahn. Like I said, I met Rick at, I think, around the same place I met you for the first time, Nathan, as well. I think it was an AGC IT forum way, way, way back in the old days, the early days. It was in Chicago. And that's where I really got, you know, got to learn a little bit more about you. So for those that don't know you, Rick, let's kind of run through a little bit of your history, introduce people to your path to where you are today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me again. So I grew up in the construction industry. My dad was a mechanical contractor in New York. And, you know, at the tender age of 15, my dad brought me in and started teaching me his trade. So by the time I was in college, I was a pipe fitter foreman for him. And I worked with him throughout college. Went to school at NJIT in Newark and studied architecture, thinking that, you know, moving up front, I'm going to be able to solve some of the problems that I saw in the field. Well, that didn't work out too well for me because I spent more time trying to figure out how to put things together than designing. So, you know, I took a sidestep, moved into the computer graphics industry to take my understanding of architecture, lighting, proportions, and apply it to the gaming industry and some of the film industry. So that was a fun sidestep, but I learned so much, and everything we were doing, we were creating our own FIR modules and a rendering platform. We were, you know, software developers were creating new things. It was innovation. And I had the opportunity to teach people around the world how to perform the technology solutions that we were selling. And it really gave me the idea of how can I take what I just learned and go back to the construction industry and drive innovation. You know, my dad taught me early on, you know, I don't want you to come back and work hard like me. I want you to go to school, come back and help us work smarter and safer, not harder. You know, so that was ingrained in me way early on. And then, you know, in 2004, I moved to Colorado and I found Mortenson Construction, which is like the confluence of everything I've learned so far and all the innovation strategies and processes I've been able to apply in the other industry and start applying that to construction. And what was interesting in 2005 in the Denver office, we started really focusing on BIM and BDC. And I saw that as an innovation focus. And I'm like, that's my dream job, right? So, started right away trying to understand design details and design management to reduce RFIs and really solve virtual challenges using the model. And through that process, you know, we created a community of practice that every quarter we were establishing goals led by senior leadership. And our community was working on those things, whether it's improved productivity or making work easier or driving early fabrication. And that led into more technology in the, like 2010 to 2015. So I took another step into the technology implementation strategy and execution process and started looking at our project controls and innovating there. And then finally, I got to the point where we were running innovation challenges. And, you know, Nathan and I had talked early on because Nathan was at DPR running innovation and we were learning from each other. And I got the opportunity to lead innovation at Mortenson, which started to focus on people and process because the technology was the easy part. And then I decided to leave Mortenson for an opportunity at STO Building Group, the top four ENR contractor in the country, and I was their chief innovation officer. And it was the first time I had the opportunity to really create a strategy, a long-term strategy around innovation and digital transformation. But, you know, like everything, you know, the honeymoon phase goes by, and I got to the point in my career where I'm like, I gained all this knowledge, and I can't believe 30 years had just flew by. So how can I take that knowledge and experience and give it back to the community? You know, and as I've always been, volunteering with students and, you know, young people to develop them. And I said, this is what I'm going to do. I got to find a way to do that. So that's why I'm here today with Innovate AEC. That's my purpose of the business, is to really drive education, knowledge, and connection to the next generation of innovators. And not just for construction, it's the AEC innovators. All right, so I just said a lot, but
well, you hit a lot, but I'm gonna go back because I remember those early days when you went through. I mean, first of all, I'm gonna say I was just writing some things down. You've been doing BIM for over 20 years. Just think about that for a second. Yeah. And secondly, if you think about your progression, you were the first person. Again, it was at a bar in Chicago. When I said, you know, what are you up to these days, Rick? And you're like, well, I'm moving on in Mortenson from the tech and the tools to the innovation and the people. And you said it just that way. You've consistently said it that way. Like, the tech is easy. It's the people. It's the change. It's that transformation that's so hard. So, I mean, is that as raising those and looking at people sort of been throughout your process?
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things that we kept stumbling on, and I say we because it wasn't just me, right? There was a whole community of people leveraging BIM and BDC and technology. The challenge was the change management piece, right? Yes, the superintendents, the PMs were really excited about it. But then when it came down to implementing, it was a lot more work. It was changing their behavior. And I realized, and we realized, look, if we really want to drive digital transformation, adoption, we need to implement a strong change management process that's focused on the revenue generating side of the business, the project teams. And we kind of prioritized and tackled that one by one based on the needs of the field team. And once we incorporated their needs, we had the power of the people across the organization saying the same thing, which made my job easy. I could go to the leadership and say, look, 100 PMs said X is a problem. I want to focus the next 6 months on that. And it was around people, right? And it was regardless of the tech. It was like, how do we figure out this process? What's the broken steps? What's the tack time? You know, where is the wait? Where is the overprocessing? And it was basically a lean, you know, implementation process or Kaizen. And that was the genesis for innovation.
Yeah, Rick, I think what you're really hitting on is what is the solution for burnout of a lot of technologists right now that go through this frustration of why don't people understand this value that you've described of all these, you know, if you don't see how BIM works, it's very hard to really understand where that value proposition comes from and where that hits the bottom line. And I think that is that natural progression for any of us to get to that next level, is to say, okay, if I can't effectively communicate the business case for any of these things, it's irrelevant as much as it's interesting to me personally, and to create that separation, which for us can be very hard when we're passionate about it, right? But yeah. I think that is something that, yeah, now we have to now teach to others so that they can also go through that same progression, and that we're all just in different stages of that progression. And it's just really cool to see you in making this next step and everything you're working on now.
Yeah. Like you said, Nathan, we're all starting to transform into that ideology of like, wait a minute, we were all technology forward. And now it's like, wait a minute, that change, that behavior, how do we help there to accelerate digital transformation? Right.
Yeah. I think Nathan hits on something there. There's a burnout factor, right? And that burnout factor, and, you know, I teased on the way in and called us Contech Bros, but I think that mentality has actually created some issues for us, some headaches for us over time. Because we've been able to be relegated to a corner. And so I'm interested, as you move into Innovate AEC, how you think that approach, what approach is it? And what are you planning on this? How are you planning on taking what I think you've done for two great organizations along the way to do for an industry? Because I think that's the transition here for you is you couldn't stay. We didn't want you to stay in a single company anymore, Rick. We need what you're breeding and building bigger. So talk a little bit about what you see Innovate doing and how this takes your message a little bit further beyond the walls of any one company.
Yeah, so good question. Let's start with the problem, right? The problem to solve. As we all know, the macro lens is talent shortage, right? We have over 500,000 people we need as workers currently, right? And you think about, you know, talent shortage, and then you look at the tribal knowledge that's stuck in these senior, you know, people's head, and it's like the most amazing knowledge. And that is not transferred down to the next generation because of the complexities and risk of projects. We're just on full burn. Let's go and solve this. And that, when you look at the younger generation, they come in with all this like knowledge and experience of technology, and they get frustrated. And within 2 years, we're starting to see more and more people, AEC workers, get out of the traditional business and move in to technology, other industries. And, you know, we see it all the time. A lot of us kind of started in some kind of design, construction, engineering firm and moved to technology. So getting back to the burnout, the problem, and, you know, I said like 30 years went by real quick, right? And we have a generational problem. The leaders today in a lot of construction organizations grew up in operations. So they have this knowledge, this tactic knowledge of doing the process. But now we have a new generation coming in and where innovation is driving things. Technology is driving things. And we have to figure out how to educate the next generation. And the idea behind it is like, let's take our collective knowledge and give it back to the young generation, right? Right? Why should they spend 3 years trying to figure out a business case for innovation or, you know, what is change management and how to apply that? Can we take that? And Innovate AEC is focused on that. The target audience is people in their 20s. And if we can distill that knowledge to them, we can reduce burnout because we can give them an avenue to take to win, you know, whether it's testing a new tech or so that's really what the confluence is. It's like bringing all these people together, and the concept that I'd like to, you know, my like one liner is connecting people to knowledge and capabilities, because you know, the last step of innovation is partnership, because no one can innovate by themselves. We bring in a community of cross-functional people and we work on an idea to deliver it. So that's the concept behind the whole thing. It's a simple concept. It's going to be hard to execute. But look, this is innovation. It's an experiment I'm running in 2024. I'm really excited about it. And we'll see where it goes, you know. But, you know, it's a blue sky out there. And, you know, if you look at Forbes and Yahoo Finance, they projected that online learning communities are going to be a $500 billion business by 2026. So, you know, it's really interesting the things that are happening. And it's all about collaboration and communication, no matter what industry you're in.
Absolutely. I mean, my wife, Liz, she's part of a marketing B2B social group, and they're very successful. And I think having those kind of off of public facing LinkedIn, sort of private, larger communities are really gaining a lot of traction. And it's just, you know, I think that the time is now for construction to have our version of it as well.
Yeah. The whole idea is like, there's no new ideas. It's just borrowed, right? This has been happening in lots of industries, for years. There's existing community platforms out there. So there's no need to recreate the wheel. My goal is to show people like, look, you don't have to do all this fancy stuff. You can just do this and actually get by. You know, I want to teach 80% is good enough. You know, you don't need to get to the 100%. And let's leverage the community to build the last 20%.
You hit an interesting point there, Rick. I mean, why not LinkedIn, right? That's I think it's important that we ask the question, why not LinkedIn?
Yeah, great question. So LinkedIn, Facebook groups, they're networks, right? And the major difference between a network and a community of practice is that a community has a domain. It's a topic, it's a function, it's something that the community members come together to work on a problem. And what I intend to do is establish quarterly or monthly topics. I will provide the basic information and the oversight of the overview of the topic. And then the goal is to ask the community to build upon it. And these learning courses are cohort. So it's not just, here are five videos to watch. It's videos with questions. And you have a comment section, and you have a section to upload reference material. And the goal is to build a new practice, right? So examples, how to build a new business case, right? To support your innovation idea. How to run a proof of concept. The difference between a pilot and a proof of concept. You know, in the BIM and VDC world, let's create a benchmark for 3D coordination, you know, and the entire community can build off of that and we can share. So that's kind of the gist behind it. So LinkedIn is a network. They're not working on problems, you know, and then you look at the feed and there's like a million stuff flooding your feed and it's, you only see 5% of the people that you follow, right? And it's a global community. Hey, let's create a small, you know, smaller community that people want to be in. And we deliver the information and the knowledge they want. And they can say what they want, you know. So that's really it's giving the people the power to really accelerate innovation.
You hit on a couple of really good nuance points in there. LinkedIn has its purpose. And I like that. LinkedIn and Facebook is networking. And we do need to network, right? We need to meet new people. I can't tell you how many new people I've met in my life through LinkedIn, just following them and being inspired or thought about and reached out, or vice versa, reached out to me. But I've watched lots of LinkedIn groups just not go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, just really not produce. Even I'm like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. And I hate that because I do believe there's a space for it. So I think the intentionality behind joining an Innovate AEC and having a problem. I love you stop me. You know, you're my yes and guy and you're my start with the problem guy. And even I ask you and you go, wait. Start with the problem, Jeff. What's the problem here? Right? We don't have a space in which we can let ideas generate and germinate and grow. And you're kind of democratizing what has been these pockets at different companies. And they are pockets of success and epic failure, right? Like, we talk about the successes all the time, but just walk around AU, Groundbreak, any event, and offer to buy the person with their head down or that look, those bags under their eyes and that look on their face, ask to buy them a coffee. And they'll tell you first thing off the record, you know, off the record. And then they tell you every time I hear that, I'm like, can I tell that story? And they're like, no. And I'm like, dang it. I want to tell that story because there's just as many failures, right? And a place like Innovate AEC is a place for me to go in and say, Rick, like, I see your business case and I see your plan here, but like, why did this happen to me? Because I did this and it failed this way. I'm spitballing from someone else here. Not that it ever happened to me. Oh no. but it's a place to say this failed. Why?
Yes.
And it's not with your own company people. Right. It's not, you're out there in a trust tree.
Yes. So here's the thing, and a quick, you know, analogy. So a community that's built on passionate people who focus on the same topics or the same problems to solve. It's interesting because that community really is really that it's interdependent with the technology vendors that are out there, the investors, the entrepreneurs, you know, the service providers. And it's really about bringing all of those pieces into one place, right? I can't tell you how many times I've missed Contact Crew, you know, shows or other shows, whether it's from, you know, podcasts or video channels. And I'm just scrambling. Oh, this is over here. This is over there. Well, I'm just going to have it in one place. List all the podcasts, list all the YouTube channels that focus on our industry, create events. I have a whole events section where you can see all the industry events that are coming and you could join them or you can register right from our platform. You know, so it's really integrating and creating this interlace environment. So, but the other thing is, you know, there's a lot of like councils that are built by vendors, you know, insurance vendors, technology vendors. And I have a challenge with that, right? Because here I am as a customer to this vendor, right? And then they create this roundtable and they're asking for my knowledge. So not only am I paying for the technology, I'm giving them knowledge and they're regurgitating it like it's their own. So I have a big problem with that. And I think there's no body that's built by the people for the people, right? and that's what I'm trying to address. And hopefully I'll be able to do it.
I think you will. And because you're approaching it from that perspective of, you know, and to I'll go point counterpoint on that. Yes, those technology companies are taking that and they're trying to learn from us.
Yeah.
And there's no other place where they can do it.
Yeah.
So it's also an opportunity now for those folks to sit back and let a community do its work and possibly gain from it. Because not all of us in the Innovate AEC are going to have the answers. We're going to create a pretty big set of problems that are the future for entrepreneurs to go tackle. There's, you know, so many of these, I met recently with a pre-construction group that's just getting together organically to talk and talk through the problems and talk through the future. And I just realized that those are the places that the ideas for future entrepreneurs are going to come from. And we want those future entrepreneurs to come from inside our industry. It's great when they come from outside if they're truly passionate about finding that problem and they have, but far too many times it's a shiny tool looking for a problem to solve in an industry to sell some stuff to. And well, we all know we got some big dollar signs in front of what we are as an industry. So it would be really nice to see this and quite frankly, it doesn't matter which one of those softwares you're talking about, it inherently brings a bias and a narrow focus, right? Because there's not enough, you know, there's very few that cross the boundaries to create an environment where everybody, the A, the E, the C, and I'll challenge you, buddy. I think we want to add the O and the, I don't know what we call you, building product manufacturers out there. What letter
BPM,
you get?
BPM.
But yeah, but can we really have the AECO BPM? I mean, we're getting AEIOU in there at some point, right? Like, well, come on.
Yes on that, because I think it's not either or on the technology side, because yes, I mean, I will definitely challenge the statement of I'm not going to share with my software provider what I want them to build me. Like, of course you're going to share with them that, right?
Absolutely.
But doing those sorts of, you know, closed door research activities are inherently going to be biased. That is exactly why CPCs, our AEC Integration Summit exists, is because it is really a replication of that same thing, but in an open forum with the A and the E and the C and your other technology partners there, folks that may be customers or may not be customers. And so you're going to get a very different, much more, you know, much less biased kind of check on where things are at. So I think you need both. And that's really starting to resonate with the product teams, is that, okay, yeah, we do actually need both. And I think, yeah, Innovate AEC is a great kind of community to start posing some of those questions to forums and start getting that early feedback from a broader group.
Yeah. So imagine a place where, you know, you have a dedicated space for technology vendors, right? And the community puts out an RFP around tracking material, around IoT, whatever, right? And we start identifying in a feed, here are the problems we're facing. Here's a challenge. Here, I'm going to work on a process map and put it in that. And then have the technologies companies come in and say, hey, we can address that. We can solve for that. And then establish a proof of concept. And here's the thing about proof of concepts, right? We have to pay for them now. So we're paying these entrepreneurs to basically develop and improve their product. That has to stop. It has to stop because it's not sustainable in our low margin industry, right? What it has to move toward is the community saying, this is the problem I need you to solve. How are you going to help me solve it, right? And if you need investors, look, I'm going to bring investors in and connect you, you know? And hey, I'm going to bring in the AEC community to say, hey, from an architectural standpoint, this is my problem. You know, so it's reversing the process. It's not every technology company coming out to all 100 top 100 companies. What we're doing is creating a space for the technology company to create one demo. And then we can create a feed underneath that to ask questions, to say, hey, I want to test this. Hey, have you looked at this tech? Because it's pretty similar. And create that conversation and have it persistent. So it's not disappearing like in LinkedIn. You know, you can always go back and find it. You know, same thing with academia. I'm really excited about the academic piece because, you know, when I was at Mortensen and, you know, when Nathan was at DPR, we were members of the SciFi organization at Stanford. And every year we were doing research with these PhD students. And a lot of those research projects turned into solutions in the market. So I want to create that again, create an RFP from schools to engage the community saying, hey, we're working on the safety topic around robots. Can you, you know, who can help us in this research? So it's creating that back and forth bidirectional knowledge transfer.
It would be so powerful to bring in academia. I mean, it is one of the things we are missing. In fact, I was talking to somebody recently about that same exact thing. Like we just don't, I mean, we have a construction management degree, right? But there's really not a lot of other things being researched and cultivated in a place where that's what we should be. And we are this big dollar sign industry, but we are a low margin industry and that those things are true. So how can we get better and more engaged? The other thing I like here too, Rick, is that I want to make sure people listening understand that also while you have this RFP and these problems and these sets like that, you're also talking about having that whole area where this next generation can learn from the walls we've already all run into along the way about making a business case, about how to approach a company. Because how many of them, and man, I can tell you how many of them I've argued with myself over the years of like, well, I can just innovate and do it myself and get it done. And then the company will just do it. And I'm like, no, in all of human history, that just doesn't work. Trust me. And there's many who have come before you who thought they could do it as well. There's a technique. There are tools. There are, you know, and by the way, people like you, Rick and Nathan, when at his time at DPR, learned a ton of lessons in failure along the way. That wouldn't it be nice if we were halfway up the ladder and that next group starts halfway up the ladder and can climb to the top of the roof and really, you know, take it where we need. So you're talking about having that go on as well. Is there other things you're thinking outside of, you know, just the problem set, but the learning and the management and the process for those people trying to get change done?
Yeah. So, the monthly topics that I'll be creating, these videos are around high level topics. So again, we're going to create this content calendar around topics. You know, I'll go out and ask the community, what are the key topics in these categories, you know? And we will build upon those learning topics. And the idea is like, I'll take one of those learning topics if we have a good feed and, you know, people contributing, and I'll package that and give it back to the community as a practice, a new practice, an improved practice. And this is about connecting people too, right? So I spent many years recruiting at lots of construction management schools like Texas A&M and other schools, and I presented to the student population so many times. And I can't, every single time I presented, students came up and said, I didn't know this was happening in the construction industry. And that was like the light bulb. I'm like, oh my goodness. All we have to do is educate them while they're in school to let them know what are the key challenges, what are the opportunities, and connect them to those people, right? And build that network before they get into the industry. It's also priming them. It's saying, hey, we have this massive opportunity, guys and gals, come help us, you know, and here's some tools to get you started. And here's some people to get you started. You know what I mean? And that's where innovation happens, is when you connect people to knowledge and capabilities.
And it's attracting people that like big problems, right? Like there is a certain personality trait when it comes to innovation that, you know, some just are more just, hey, I'm going to, you know, go with the way things have gone before and I'm more comfortable with that. And that's okay. But yeah, how do you attract those that like solving big problems? We have to let the industry know that there's big problems, but most of us in the industry don't want to share any of our big problems. And herein lies the dilemma, this vicious cycle we've been in for a decade plus.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if I go back to 3D coordination and thinking about like the learning topic, it's going to be a topic around, you know, the value of 3D coordination to drive fabrication, to, you know, to drive procurement, to enhance schedule, to reduce RFIs, to minimize change orders based on lack of information. And show people how the 3D coordination process actually addresses that and the business value and how to calculate averted cost and how to calculate reduction in RFI, how to calculate these things. So provide them all that information and you can use whatever tool you want, Revisto, Navisworks, whatever the case may be. But the process is understood and you can then communicate that to your project manager, your superintendent, because that's what's missing. You know, hey, I got Navisworks. So you got this double clicker. Go do your thing over there while we build this project. We got to change that mindset.
Yeah, it's super awesome because you're giving them a number of things that they, you know, Nathan, you love this, right? It's measurable. We love measurable. We need measurable. We need purpose. We need an understanding of why we need to do this. So why is this clash detection and what is the process and how are we going to do it? And then how are we going to measure it? And how are we going to show the organization that there's value in what we're doing? That's that loop that's going to get the flywheel rolling for companies to keep these kinds of things going. And I know there's trade contractors out there that are like, please, Rick, teach the world how to drive fabrication through coordination and through modeling, because we need it.
It's not just about me. It's about the community building it.
Well, that's what I mean. When I say Rick, I say, you know, build me a platform where this happens and we can unabashedly share the information and democratize it, right? We hear that word a lot. And I love democratizing the knowledge of how to do these things, because these should be table stakes. And I've talked to many a company about this where they're afraid to share with their competition. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. Y'all complain to me that, you know, BIM's not everywhere and that they're not driving this fabrication everywhere, but then you don't want to share it. Well, if you don't want to share it, that means somebody out there is going to do it the old way. And the more people that aren't doing the old way, the more it becomes table stakes, the more we can stand up and do more with it. So you're really allowing us again to build on that framework and to, you know, again, rising tide lifts all ships. Again, if a general contractor can't find a trade contractor that will stick build it, then they're going to be forced to figure out how to model it and drive fabrication.
Man, I really wish we had more time, but we are going to get into that construction tech news of the week. And I picked some interesting ones specifically for you, Rick. My first one here. So talking about Apple Vision Pro, I know you're a big AR, VR. I will never forget your profile photo with the HoloLens on, which, like, again, we can talk about HoloLens in a second here. But the article here, Apple Vision Pro, if you haven't heard, is currently sold out of their very pricey headset. They released, I think, 160 to 180,000 of these Vision Pros that were bought up really just over the weekend at around $3,500 a pop. Again, a little bit more expensive than I'm willing to pay, but again, maybe companies will. But if you really look at it, again, if Apple has, as they say here, 1.2 billion users, that 160,000 to 180,000 only comes out to 0.007% of the most passionate Apple users that are just going to buy it no matter what. So it's sort of like, I don't know, Vertical is kind of still out on whether or not it's going to be a success. And I did a little bit of deep diving and was reading videos on Apple Vision Pro for architecture or construction. And it was like the same people talking about the same concepts from HoloLens that still to this day, we're not really, I mean, I don't know, Rick, what are your thoughts on it?
Man, I am such a big fan of AR because I believe just like when the touchscreen interface came out, it revolutionized the way we interacted with data, all right? And it became mobile first. And, you know, back then the AR ideas were bouncing around. But, you know, when you think about the touchscreen interface, the AR heads-up display would be the new way to interact with data, right? So right now it's in the incubation time, you know, and companies are trying to understand the customer needs. But like when I think about it, I think about AR as the Time Horizon 3 model, right? And then I look back to today and I'm like, what do we need? We need a data connected job site. We need location awareness. We need sensor technology to create Wi-Fi mesh or some kind of, you know, 3D locationing system. And then we have to parse that data back and forth to whether it's a mobile phone or whatnot. So just imagine, you know, if we work on a problem in our community saying, we got to get to AR. Well, what do we do today? What do we do next year? What do we do the year after that? And let's share that with these vendors, right? So we can actually help participate in the evolution of that tech.
Yeah, I love your take on it, man. It's an arms race. And I will say I just happened to have a call with someone, a new friend. I'll leave them nameless, but because they were really excited about this, they work in this field but they've gotten their hands on the early versions of it and it's just not enough yet. But what I liked was the conversation we had was, yeah, the headsets are still falling short. But Apple getting in the game now, because look, you had HoloLens 1, took a long time for HoloLens 2, and there's no look on the future, as far as I know, from a roadmap for HoloLens 3 yet. So why? Because there's nobody chasing them. So why are you going to run if nobody's chasing you, right? Like, that's just the way it is. So with Apple jumping in, you now have Apple, you have, you know, Meta and Facebook doing theirs. So I think that's the Meta Quest now. And then Microsoft, and they're really starting this arms race that I hope brings us, Rick, like you said, step over step over step to the point where we're finally using them in certain workflows that make sense to us. I have to go back and tease my own self because, you know, I was the guy up here saying everybody would have a HoloLens on it someday. And that's just not going to happen. Like, that's really not how we're going to build, especially because democratization means it's going to work here just as well. That headset, that Apple Vision Pro, is going to have a real use case. And I think a powerful one. I think there will be almost like, we look at certain operators of heavy equipment on job sites as like I don't want to call it the height, the top of certain things. Like if you're running certain equipment, that means you're very skilled, right? And you're very experienced, like crane operators, et cetera. I think at some point, those people walking with those Apple Vision Pros or whatever thing I don't know yet that's going to come out will be considered those, wow, that is somebody who's super experienced and is really driving value on this job site by doing X, Y, and Z. What are they doing? Are they running the crane from it? Are they installing materials through robotics? Are they managing, you know, autonomous machinery? I don't know, but they'll be doing some job like that. So I thought, you know, Nathan just gave me that look like, you got out there again.
You gave me a thought. Now I think we're going to have to find a friend in the military and ask him if drone pilots and actual jet pilots are treated the same or not.
Oh, wow.
Is that
not
a good
question?
Analogy? Yeah, yeah, and how it's treated. Yeah, it might reflect a little bit on how we treat it. But at any rate, my next article. Thanks to Construction Dive for putting together some really interesting data so we can nerd out on this. Definitely Rick and Jeff, click on the link and check out this really cool graph that they put together of this manufacturing boom. So since this CHIPS Act that came out in August of 2022, there's been a huge boom in manufacturing. I've definitely heard it sort of anecdotally through a large project coming together. And I think what's interesting, Rick, talking about this whole transparency or the desire to hide certain things, just the amount of data that is publicly available about, you know, how big projects are, what GCs are awarded them. If I'm a software company, I'm eating this stuff up of like, you know, how do you go after folks that are winning these jobs that if you've got a certain solution that, you know, really, can help a certain type of project like a semiconductor plant or an EV plant or these other manufacturing facilities, because there is a huge boom right now. And, you know, with that boom is going to come limited resources, accelerated schedules, and they'll pay the money to get this stuff done fast. But yeah,
holy
I don't know.
Cow.
It's cool. It's good.
You want to go back. I mean, we've covered this a couple of times. Like there's some fears about the economy. If you have fears about the economy right now, you really need to go to this Construction Dive article and just look. I'm looking at a $15 billion semiconductor plant in Boise, Idaho. There's a 40 billion Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing in Phoenix, Arizona. Like, in fact, in Phoenix, Arizona, there's bubble upon bubble upon bubble. Like, you can't even get through it. I just counted up like $60 billion in facilities right there.
Yeah.
Advanced manufacturing is back, man. And what's your thoughts on it, Rick?
I just feel like it's really unfair to the citizens of this country that we farm out all our manufacturing to different countries east. And it's really disturbing because we have so many people that need work, and it's repetitive work that can easily be taught and replicated. And, you know, yes, great for construction, but even better for the people of this country. I mean, let's bring it back. I mean, these companies that are manufacturing overseas are still making billions of dollars. So they have no excuse not to bring it back here. I mean, really, come on.
And this is a great example. We've talked before about that Deloitte article that shows the four tipping points of innovation, of the technology being at a certain maturity, and then you need individuals that will adopt it, and then you need business models that support it. But that last one is the public policy. And so as far as things coming back to America, the CHIPS Act is exactly that example of public policy changes that create business incentives that then want individuals to come do that. And here we are. So, you know, yeah, it is crazy how far separated we think they are, but they really are quite close together.
You're right. And I'll add a little scary piece of information if you're not watching it. The Houthi issues that we're seeing in the shipping lanes. Yeah, COVID caused issues. This might cause five times that. I mean, the impacts of some of the things I was reading recently about the impacts on that area, and then the possible escalation of what's happening in that area as well, could really drive problems. And it's one more reason why we have to solidify our supply chain and handle and take care of and balance it, right? It's about balance. It's not, Rick, you're right. It's not that it should leave all of those other countries and leave them barren or destitute. It should really be balanced, because there's going to be times in which we need to pull from each other and create a global economy that has scale and redundancy like you have in anything. And so it's great to see it come back. And I think, you know, those countries will go through their industrial revolutions as well, to the point where they will want to have more knowledge workers and not have bodies to put in factories. And we should want that as well. And I love cool robots. And cool robots do really good things building things and give people really awesome other jobs as well. So Nathan, those are awesome. I'm going to jump right into mine. And I got this one because I love Contech and tacos. This is constructionbriefing.com, but I, you know, if you guys aren't signed up for Contech and tacos, you're really missing out. Great newsletter every week. I'm big on the newsletters these days. And couple of predictions. The AI advancement is key for autonomy. And I think this is pretty interesting because we've talked about the hype of disillusion, you know, the hype curve and, you know, the inflated expectations and the trough of disillusionment. I think one of the interesting things about AI is that it went through that process quickly, right? And now we're starting to see the rubber hit the road. And this is AI's impact on construction transcends recent headlines. It's been silently advancing the industry for years. This is the improvements in the technology create significant opportunities for automation. And what that does is it hits on what Rick was talking about earlier. We've got to eliminate repetitive steps and repetitive processes because we have a dwindling skilled workforce and we have a giant increasing need. If you look at Nathan's earlier article, and those jobs need people, right? They need production levels, and we're not going to be able to achieve them by throwing bodies at it. We're going to have to lift those bodies up and allow for automation of the things that can be automated so that people can focus on the real skills and talent that's needed, which is cool because it's like technology is skilling jobs, not killing jobs, was part two. And I love that because it goes right back to the same thing on automation, the same thing on skilled labor, the same thing on just things like project budgets and bid submissions. And just some of the numbers in here are great. I mean, just think about this for a second. It says, according to the Autonomous Tech Outlook, 84% of construction firms already incorporate autonomy in some operations. I want to know where they're getting some of those from. Because I don't, but I do think it's true. The third one was productivity and profitability go hand in hand with sustainability. I love this because I think a focus on sustainability, a focus on waste, drives towards the things we talked about earlier, guys. We talked about fabrication, right? We waste so much material on a job site, you know. Charlie Dunn and the group, we go through exercises with people to just show them and visualize the waste. If we can go to fabrication, we can eliminate waste. Eliminating waste creates sustainability. Looking at alternative ways to build, we had Patrick Murphy on last week, and he talked a lot about some of his new projects with new building materials, eliminating concrete. Those are the things we can do. And then machine control, cloud connectivity, and AI are the top investments forecasted. So interesting that we're still talking about cloud connectivity, but I think that goes back to your point, Rick. We need BIM data. We need locational data. We need sensor data. We need all of that in a mesh that we can consume in real time. So the investments are in those areas. And I think machine controls, when you think about autonomous vehicles, doing a lot of the work that we have from the IIJA, Nathan, is horizontal construction. Horizontal construction working in heavy equipment is hard on the body. And it's actually fairly safe. It's very safe to automate because of most of the work is ground work. So there's an ability to create safe zones and have one individual managing multiple pieces of equipment. So that's the article. Nathan, you're shaking your head. I'm wondering which one grabbed you.
Well, I'm going to get on my BIM soapbox because it's just that technology is skilling jobs, not killing them. Like, I mean, that was when I was meeting Rick and learning all the great things that BIM can do and advocating as a BIM project engineer, because I didn't think that BIM should be separate from a project engineer. If a project engineer did light table coordination, then they're the ones doing BIM coordination. And it's like, why do we all of a sudden separate this tool as its own job when it's just a tool that should be making us better at our jobs? But off my soapbox, Rick.
I agree, man. I am aligned with you 100%.
And that everyone has their different uses for it, right? Like BIM, like the way an architect uses BIM, the way an engineer uses BIM, the way a fabricator uses BIM, or other things that it comes from. Because again, it could be GIS, you know, geographic information systems to BIM, or it could be BIM to CAM, you know, the computer-aided manufacturing. And that whole world, yeah, then you get into all kinds of crazy technical translation stuff that we certainly don't have time to talk about.
Well, the one thing that struck me was AI, right? And the acceleration of AI. Here's my challenge with that. So we are still collecting information. We're trying to convert it to digital information. We have multiple data entry points, whether it's, you know, PE entering it in and then going back to the office and having somebody else, you know, correct it or fill it out in the right fields in Excel. Well, you know, that whole paradigm, we are going through our digital transformation in our industry. And everyone's talking about AI. No one's talking about structuring their data. No one's talking about what would it take to leverage your historical data to be able to leverage AI to do, to be more predictive or more prescriptive, right? Mm-hmm. Here's a good example. Everything we do, design, construction, is all rules-based. Every single thing we do is rules-based. If you think about it, engineering, design is a way we can have to design to meet needs. Engineering, construction, we have to do things a certain way. All of those things can be automated at some point in the future, maybe 50 years from now, right? So what happens when the architect, and this is happening today, the architect is using AI to create generative designs, 50 of those designs, they show the owner likes 10 of them, they send it over the fence to the contractor, the contractor has to estimate 10, schedule 10, constructability 10, you know, are we prepared for that in construction? What are the tools are we using? You know, so that's what keeps me up in terms of AI. I'm just like, wow, yes, AI. But man, we have a long way to go. How do we get there? We need help, you know?
Amen.
We got a long way to go and a short time to get there is the problem. But I will argue I've had more conversations recently with people that truly are focusing on data structure and data collection and their own, getting their own houses in order. And I think that's one of the cool consequences of AI is that a bunch of people realized, uh-oh, like there, if we're not there, we have nothing to run against a model, you know, a large language model. We have nothing to compare it to. What are we going to do and how are we going to do it? And we better get our house in order and we better do it fast. And so I think that's creating an accelerant and a reason and a need across the industry. But that's a nice little segue because it takes me to my final article, which I was tagged in this post because this group knows I love them. But I'm also very interested because AI, you know, I was one of the naysayers in the beginning of be careful. But the team at Document Crunch adds conversational AI to its contract risk review solution for accelerated contract insights. What does that mean? It means now, because they've harnessed and isolated the models so that it's not publishing your contracts to the world, but leveraging the power of, I'm guessing here, I read through it, but I believe they're grabbing onto OpenAI's engine and using it themselves to use a model. So you can, the whole group can ask questions of the contract and democratize the contract. Rick, you said it. We're all rules-based here. Right, there are rules that we must follow also that our contract tells us. And one of our problems is a pinch point of people not understanding or being able to get the information out of those contracts. And this is an interesting piece because that is structured data now for us, right? We have those contracts very structured. They, if we hold on to anything, we lose daily reports and time cards all the time. But we don't lose contracts, baby. Nobody lets us lose those. So it's democratizing it and allowing groups across the value chain to really ask questions, get intelligent information, and make informed decisions on it. So good on you, Document Crunch. I'm interested, Rick, to see your take on one of the first few. I mean, there's a couple that are really tapping into these large language models, creating safe environments for us to really use them with the power that they have.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think about two things. Obviously, in contracts, it's kind of boilerplate for a lot of projects, right? They're very similar. They move, they change clauses. Based on that repetition in nature, the language models can actually provide so much more value, right? Same thing with specifications, right? It's written a certain way, whatever the, you know, formatting is, but there's a lot of implicit knowledge in that data that's already structured. So being able to learn off of that and actually ask questions, I think is the perfect next step. And, you know, a big part of me feels like, you know, I talk about people in process, but from a digital transformation standpoint, if you jumped on a integrated platform, say Procore, ACC, eBuilder, whatever the case may be, it doesn't matter. It allows you to structure your data to then apply it to different learning models. So it's kind of like technology first in that scenario to drive digitization. But anyway, it's just a thought.
All right. I have another random thought then, because I just thought about you probably watched the Netflix with like Black Mirror and like the kids watch this Bear Grylls one that are interactive where like you get to choose your own adventure. And so like, what is the contract of the future that as you go through the contract, you get to these decision points of like, do you want to do it A, B, or C? And based on your choice, it then when you get to the next step may have different choices because it is all kind of interrelated and it is this giant web. That we think of like a static document being your contract, but really it is this very interrelated machine that we have to be more collaborative in figuring out, and it should just spit it out. So this is very much an early starting point of that, and it'll be cool to see how far we get. And I can't not say the word blockchain in all of this, right? Because smart contracts and blockchain, like that, but that's not the solution, right? Like us figuring out the process is the solution. Blockchain just might be the best IT way of solving it, which again is out of, unless you're a Jeff Sample, out of our foyer.
Yeah, not where you really want. And again, it's going to be at some point, we won't be talking about AI. We'll just be talking about the tools that this is always how it goes, right? I mean, I guess there was some cloud that we talked about a little while ago, but it feels like you never really hear about that anymore. It's just out there. It's like, okay, that's how we do business, right? This is the technology that underlies and creates tools and systems for us to utilize along the way. So I'm excited for them. I'm excited for seeing more of this harnessed to democratize and again, keep people out of the minutiae and into, you know, the overall power of decision-making and informed decision-making. Because again, the thing the AI is never going to know is when Nathan's building his house, what does he value, right? As you expand or do something, what do you value, right? And value informs the decision as much as data and insights do as well. So it's a convergence of those things that's going to make it capable. And by the way, if you haven't watched that Bear Grylls thing, I watch it with my daughter all the time. And I always make him eat the thing he's not wanting to eat. So just a little side note, check it out on Netflix if you haven't. It's really quite fun because I always make him eat the thing he doesn't want to eat.
I
want to thank you, buddy, for coming on today and joining us and sitting down and talking about your new adventures. And I want to wish you the best because I'm going to be a part of Innovate AEC and I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you guys. I appreciate your support. And you know, it's about the people like us who've been in the industry for a while, coaching and mentoring the next generation.
Well, you guys should check it out. It's INNOV, the number 8 AEC.com. Check about Innovate AEC.com. Learn what Rick's up to. Follow him on LinkedIn. If you're not following him on LinkedIn, you're missing out. So go connect with him or follow him. It's worth it. Nathan, It's so good to have you on, sit down on the microphone, back in the office. You know, Liz's view upstairs is great, but you know, this feels like home to me.
Yeah. Yeah. One of these days I'll record from her office when it's ready. But for now, it is good to be home, back home in the cave.
Well, thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Rick Kahn from Innovate AEC. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.